Okay, Skylark Lounge by Nigel Cox. Chapter 1. Here we go. I'm going to start at the pool hall. Me behind the counter, no one in the place. I had the morning paper. I had a CD going, one of my old reliables, Everything by Ray Charles, which I can stand to hear more or less any time. I had some decent coffee in a big white bucket of a cup that I'd picked out in askew, thinking, yes, they'll get off right if I have that to drink out of. I had cigars there in the box on the counter if the mood for a big smoke up took me. The feeling was I had things just about sorted, things back in place. Later, as guys arrived, the mood changed. They come in with their mates, two or three in a group, and they're away from their women, away from their jobs. They have money, not that it's that expensive, $10 or so, and the pool hall is there waiting for them, decent and clean and solid as a rock. At the counter, they talk quietly to me because they think that that's the right thing to do. Me there on my stool with my paperback, the owner, the boss. Well, not the boss, but the guy who's delivering this to them. Bluesy saxophone playing softly in the background. Every now and then I walk out among the tables, empty the ashtrays, check the toilets. Walk the aisles. The guys say, Jack. Hi, Jack, because they like saying my name. It's always a good feeling to be on a first-name basis with the proprietor. Now, immediately I should say here that I'm not a big bloke. In the classic crime novels, the Raymond Chandlers and the Dashiell Hammetts, the guy who has all the guys say hi, Jack, to him is big and he's easy inside his size and nobody bothers him because he's just so big and wide that if he had to, he'd pound you right down into the ground, so what's the point? But that's not me. I'm just size average, Mr. Average, and in some ways that's what I think the guys enjoy, that I could just as easily be one of them or they be me. It was important to me, then, that I appeared normal and solid, that there was no reason to be wondering about me. On the best nights, there was a terrific atmosphere in the place, with the balls clacking quietly and the smooth green turf of the tables, each table with its rectangle of light, the lights with good soft bulbs spreading a steady glow which made everything seem as though it had been aged in, just short of faded, but with a bit of history, a bit of feeling, and the racks on the walls with the cues standing evenly spaced and straight-backed in them. Not that any of the guys who came to play there knew anything about me. They had my first name to use, Jack, like a coin they passed amongst themselves, but not a lot else. I was just the latest owner of the Skylark Lounge, where they'd been coming forever. As long as nothing changed about the place, no one cared who I was, which was the way I liked it. So I had it all back under control, and I had my coffee going, and old man Ray Charles going on the CD player. There was no one about yet. It was early, probably about 9:30 a.m. I usually got the doors open about 9 and then got myself set so I could enjoy the morning and get the day going right. I had the paper spread on the countertop, working my way through the sports on the back page, which I always saved until last. And there, on the back page, was a picture which rose up at me to override all the other parts of the morning that I had so carefully put in place. The picture was of a tennis player, Stevie Grout, being ordered from the court in an interprovincial, having punched a linesman. A dispute over a line call, and Big Stevie had smacked him on the jaw. Under the headline, Out, Grout, the picture showed Stevie, head bowed, shoulders slumped, slinking away to the showers. I felt for him. I felt for the linesman, too. A punch from Stevie is no laughing matter. A few months ago, Stevie punched me on the jaw. My teeth still ache. Big Stevie used to be my son. When he was just a bub, I put a tennis ball in his cot. Before he could walk even, I had bought him a kiddie racket. I taught him how to hit a topspin backhand. Now he won't speak to me. Now he won't even punch me. Now he's punching other guys instead, left, right and centre. Playing the game we both love, he throws a punch in a big match and is ejected from the court in disgrace, probably for good. It wasn't that I'd been expecting this picture to be in the paper. I don't believe in synchronicity. As far as I'm concerned, a coincidence is a coincidence. It's important that I get this clear. I don't believe in fairies at the bottom of the garden, because what I'm going to get down in these pages will cast that into doubt. But, looking back, it's impossible not to note how so many forces seemed at that time to be combining. Clouds were gathering. Events that should have been random seemed to be coming together to drive a wedge between me and my world.